Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this hour, this first hour of the show, we will spend some time thinking about and talking about religion and violence. And certainly this is something that I know we've touched on other programs. And most recently, in connection with a symposium, a program that took place on the campus back earlier this year, and that is really the jumping off point, the inspiration for this conversation again this morning. A number of people coming to the campus to take part in this. This is happening on Saturday, the 20th. It's sponsored by the Illinois Forum on Religion in America, which is part of the Program for the Study of Religion. And here on the program this morning, we have two guests. Both of them are people who, it's Friday, not Saturday, it's Friday, April 20th on the U of I campus. More information, I'm sure, can be available if you go to the website of the Program for the Study of Religion. There you can find out more about it. Here in the studio with me, I have Jonathan Ebel. He is Assistant Professor of Religious Studies here at the University of Illinois. And joining us by telephone is John Carlson. He is Assistant Professor of Religious Studies at Arizona State University, where he is also Associate Director of the Center for the Study of Religion and Conflict. And this is something that both of them are interested in their academic work, and both of them have been involved in organizing these symposia. And then there will be another one taking place in the fall at Arizona, right? Okay. As we talk here, questions and comments certainly are welcome. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455, and then here locally, 333-9455. At any point here, if you have questions, comments, people who are listening certainly are welcome to join the conversation. The only thing we ask is that people try to keep their comments brief, just so that we can keep moving along, get in as many people as possible. Well, Professor Ebel, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
And here on the telephone with us is John Carlson. Professor Carlson, hello.
Good morning.
And just I'll just mention one fact that both of our guests here both got their PhDs at University of Chicago. Whether that is a significant fact or not, I don't know. But I think that that's all. The two of you became acquainted then when you were at Chicago.
We did. We actually entered in the same class and graduated within a year of each other.
Okay. This is a subject that I know that both of you in your academic work, this is something that you teach on and have write on and have thought a lot about. Maybe here I'll begin with Jonathan Ebel and ask this question. Do you think, obviously this is a subject, possible connections between violence and religion and how each of those things can inform and shape the other. That's always going to be an important thing to be thinking about. Is there something, though, about the place that we are now, you think, that makes exploring these questions particularly important?
Well, certainly the events of the last 5-6 years have brought the connection between religion and violence into the public eye. But one thing that John and I are interested in doing is drawing that public eye back through American history and demonstrating, as you indicated, the enduring relevance of this topic. It isn't something that just popped on the scene September 11th, 2001. And so while we are interested in taking the rather tragic opportunity that we're faced with, that we have now to examine this and catch the public's attention, it is also something that we would like to demonstrate has a long-standing relevance in American history.
Yeah. Well, I'll turn here to John Carlson, and you can make a response to the same question.
Good morning. Thank you very much. I certainly agree with John, and much of the attention in the last few years has been on the international scene, and particularly wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And when the question of religion and violence is raised, usually the assumption is that the religion one is speaking about is Islam. And while that is certainly a topic that has received quite a bit of attention, deservedly so, whether in the very question and the range of answers about Islam's relationship to violence, we don't want to forget that there are many other religions in the world and that we have a very rich religious history in our own country, and that we need to consider other religions' relationship to violence. And so that's certainly one of the things that we'll be exploring in these symposia, and of course that religions relate to one another, and that violence can sometimes be a part of that, and that that the ways in which these different religions interact with one another, and the ways in which and religious people interact with the secular, can be an important feature too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think certainly it's worth making the point that, for example, as far as Christianity is concerned, that people have been thinking about violence, at least the form of organized violence we call war, at least as far back as Augustine. And so that there is a long tradition of thinking about that in Christianity, and I am assuming that in other faiths as well, they have had to confront the same sort of question, particularly when it comes to something that we might call God-directed violence. When God says, go and smite these folks, that has happened in a lot of faith traditions, and I am sure that people then have to confront this question of what makes that appropriate, and in what circumstances is the exercise of violence, particularly by the state or by the group, a sanctioned activity?
Is that for is that for me?
You can go on that,
well,
and
sure.
and then we'll let Professor Ebel do the same.
Sure. I guess I would. I certainly think that's an important issue, and one of the main concerns whenever the topic of religion and war is raised is the idea that religious reflection or ideas are somehow can pertain to matters of politics and war, is that there's an assumption then that that means someone is fielding orders from God, so to speak, and leading campaigns into the and onto the battlefield and smiting others in God's name. And certainly there's evidence of that in the Hebrew Scriptures, among other places. There's evidence in the Crusades that who preached the Crusade certainly saw their causes holy and more than just just, but sanctifying, and that the use of force was not simply a secular affair, but could in fact lead to martyrdom. And so these are very worrisome kinds of precedents, and there have been other precedents in Western history. Certainly, the wars of religion in the 16th century. 16th, 17th century primarily, in Europe, and from those kinds of experiences, people have concluded that mixing religion and politics is, in times of war especially, is often not a very good thing to do. But there are also ways in which we can draw from religious ideas, going, as you noted, back to Augustine or Aquinas and others, to think morally about the certain occasions that might warrant the use of force, not for sanctifying or salvific purposes, but for earthly purposes that are quite justifiable. One can think as of a humanitarian intervention, perhaps as the perhaps the most significant kind of example of a case in which the use of force might be morally justifiable, or even a use of force in response to a direct attack, and that is in the use of self-defense. And religious traditions sometimes help us to think about those and to working through some of the various problems, dilemmas, and objections to why religion is problematic and why, in fact, in the end, force or war might be justifiable.
Yeah. I know you wanted to respond to the point. Yeah.
Well, yes. The as you noted, the God-directedness of violence is an important point where religion and violence intersect, and it's one that we can see quite frequently in American history just by looking at the wars as we march through from the Revolution to the Civil War, and prior to the Revolution, the King Philip's War, a small but very bloody war between the colonists in Massachusetts and Native American tribes surrounding them, on through World War I, and that rhetoric continues through the 20th century and down to the 21st. Mm-hmm. The God-directedness, though, is only one of the many interesting ways that religion intersects with violence. We can also find general religious tropes, religious language that's used to frame mm-hmm. violence, the imagined religiousness of the experience of violence, that it is somehow redemptive, salvific, and also the use of religious rhetoric, religious themes, scriptures to make sense of the aftermath of violence. And those are all things that we are interested in examining in this project.
I have several callers here. I want to make sure these people know I'm not going to make them wait too much longer. Let me just raise one very, very broad point and have you each of you talk a little bit about it. And I'll start here with Jonathan Ebel. Here in the United States, we have the reputation, we like to think of ourselves as being a religious country in the sense that if you go out and you ask people, do you believe in God, we're going to get significant numbers of people who say yes. At the same time, also, the United States has a reputation of being a violent society. At least if we go around the world and we ask people, what do you think about the United States? I'm sure that we'll get from them comments that say, yes, that they think there's a lot of violence in the United States. That's not to say it's the most violent place. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that there aren't other societies where there's violence. That goes without saying. But here now we have these two things that seem in some sense to be contradictory. That is, a society that says religion and belief in God is important, and also a society where there are significant levels of violence, one person visiting violence on another. Mm-hmm. So then that invites this question, is there some connection between those two things? Or is it, in fact, that they exist somewhat independently of one another? And it's just because those two things exist side by side, that doesn't necessarily mean that the two things are connected.
Sure. Well, I think the answer is sometimes yes and sometimes no. I listened to Martin Marty on the radio here a couple of months ago, who described religion as sometimes phenomenal, central to the phenomenon, and sometimes epiphenomenal, something that's kind of around it. And I think that we see both of those. And it's contradictory, really, only insofar as one posits religion as a nonviolent entity. And I think that not even a particularly close reading of the scriptures of Judaism and Christianity and Islam demonstrate that there are plenty of words and phrases and stories there to fuel many kinds of violence. Mm-hmm.
Well, John Carlson, what do you think?
Well, I would only add to that one has to distinguish between various forms of violence that take place in within American society, whether one's talking about crimes, either kind of everyday crime that we're accustomed to reading about and seeing on the news, or very extreme forms of crime, that shock the senses, like we've been observing on the Virginia Tech campus lately. And of course, those are very different kinds of forms of violence than violence that's used by the state, either in lawful means, the use of coercion or coercive force, either by the state or by police officers or in foreign policy. This is a very different kind of use of physical force, and some would call that violence. And so one has to make distinctions. In some cases, violence may be, or force at least, may be appropriate, may be the only real means available to counter and confront other forms of violence. So religion, to bring us back to your question, is certainly something that can be found in either phenomenal or epiphenomenal ways in those different kind of strata of violence, but one then does have to make some important distinctions between motives that have to do with socioeconomic issues or psychological issues that lead to intense violence, as well as questions about the appropriate use of force by law enforcement agencies and others, agents of the state who are charged with protecting citizens.
We have here in the studio with us Jonathan Ebel. He is Assistant Professor of Religious Studies here at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Joining us on the telephone, John Carlson, Assistant Professor of Religious Studies at Arizona State University. He is also Associate Director of the Center for the Study of Religion and Conflict, both of them involved in organizing a symposium that will take place on Friday here on the U of I campus on the topic Multidisciplinary Perspectives on Violence, Faith, and America. And this is the second that they've been involved with. One took place in February, And then there's this one, and that would be one taking place in the fall, then out in Arizona, bringing together scholars from various places to talk about some of these issues. And again, this is sponsored by the Illinois Forum on Religion in America, part of the Program for the Study of Religion. If you're interested in finding out more about the events on Friday here on this campus, probably the easiest thing is to go to the website of the Program for the Study of Religion, and you can get the information there. We have some callers here who would like to join in the conversation, and that's certainly welcome. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. The first is in Kankakee on our toll-free line. This is line 4. Hello.
Perhaps on the subject of religion and violence, your caller could comment on an aspect of the Christian faith and hear responses from the guests. Your caller would assert that the Christian faith is not particularly interested in or affected by religion. This faith is rather just that faith, and this faith expresses itself as lifestyle. The Roman Empire early came even to regard Christians as atheists due to, at least in part, the fact that the faith of Christians freed them rather than bound them, as the etymology of the word religion suggests that religions do. When the Apostle James spoke of religion, he had to modify the word with the adjective pure to distinguish true religion from the standard brand, in saying that pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, to keep himself unspotted from the world. Might an understanding such as this add to the understanding of the relationship between religion and violence, in that if faith were a matter of positive lifestyle rather than a matter of compulsion, would not violence vanish?
Well, that's a complicated set of ideas. Professor Carlson, can you take a shot at that?
Sure. Let me try to reframe what I take to be some central points that the caller is raising. And I thank you for the question. It sounds, if I'm getting this right, that there's a concern that there are distinctions between simply religious beliefs and calling oneself a Christian and living a true Christian life, and that that the true Christian life is one that would renounce violence or at least dissolve the problem of violence. And I'm not sure if that's the caller's main kind of concern. Am I getting it there?
I kind of think so, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So if that's the case, I mean, one, there are some different responses to this, and this is not an uncommon Christian response. I mean, if one looks at the many pacifist elements within the tradition, whether those are Anabaptist communities, Amish, Mennonites, and others, or whether that has to do with those who consider themselves of that kind of persuasion, where one's Christian faith and commitment truly shapes one's character and has an all-defining feature, which one of which is a commitment to peace and to nonviolence, then it certainly is the case then that would have a very powerful influence over someone in their commitment not to use force. I mean, this is a restatement to some extent of the definition of what, in this caller's mind, of what it would mean to be truly committed. The question then becomes: well, what does that look like when one is concerned about the use of the presence of violence? And so, a very good example of this might be the school shooting that occurred at the Amish school. I think that was a year or so ago now, in which there were several children who were shot and many and killed by someone who, obviously, an outsider to the community, who got into the community and lined them up in execution style and started shooting these poor young girls. So the Amish response was a non-violent and a pacifist response. It was not one that sought revenge or force, and it was not one that wanted to use force against the intruder either. Although obviously that raises questions about the how one protects one's society, but that that's an example, perhaps, of a way in which the resort to nonviolence out of the depths or wellsprings of one's faith tries to use something other than violence as a primary mode of living and exhibiting one's faith in the world.
I think I see an assumption in the question that we would need to question and talk about, which is that somehow, somewhere, back at the very beginning of the Christian tradition, first of all, there was some kind of consensus about what it meant to be a Christian, what it meant to adopt a Christian lifestyle, and it was a second assumption, perhaps, that lifestyle would not include, in some instances, violence. We are quite familiar with the tradition of martyrdom in the ancient Christian church. Now, one can argue about distinguish between violence as inflicted and violence as suffered. Still, from the very beginning, from the crucifixion, you have a violent act that essentially inaugurates the faith, and many people in the wake of that act looking to imitate it. So to me, it is very hard to pull apart Christian tradition and violence at any point in history.
I have another person here, someone who has us on a cell phone, so I really want to get to them. I expect we'll continue to deal with some of these ideas, but they've been waiting for some time, so I want to get right there, line one in Champaign. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go in another direction, specifically in a way in relation to the previous question. It seems to me, and I'll just put this out and hear what your guests have to say, it seems to me that specifically the Abrahamic theistic traditions have inherent in them justification for violence in the sense that whether it's in terms of tolerance and intolerance towards other traditions, whether it's in the sense of forced conversions, whether it's in the sense of saying that only in this way, whatever the particular way is, whether it's the Islamic or Christian or Jewish way, only in this way does one come to God or to heaven or to whatever else. And further justification for treating believers and non-believers in different ways. And you see this in the Islamic tradition, and you see this in Christian tradition, and so on and so forth. So my point is that not that all theists or Abrahamic, those following the Abrahamic religions are this way, but that inherent in the Abrahamic tradition or in the theistic tradition, because it's theistic, because it's Abrahamic, this violence and intolerance is there, and therefore always accessible to those who want to use that aspect of the religion. So I'll get off and hear your response. Thank you.
All right. Again, very good and difficult question, Jonathan Ebel.
Well, let's go with the fact that there is some violence inherent in these traditions, that it is a part of the traditions, without saying that it is essential to the traditions. That I'm comfortable with. You look at the scriptures, you look at the history of the cultures. These are traditions that emerge in violent contexts, and religions exist in the world. They exist in the world, and they reflect and are in dialogue with that world. So, I can accept the fact that violence is a part of these traditions. But the caller's assertion that it is because they are theistic is problematic to me, because that would seem to me to presuppose that the elimination of some sort of theistic belief would reduce or remove violent tendencies from communities, human history, and that just simply is not the case.
I guess one of the things I would want to add to that is that, again, on this concern of because they're theistic, what about those views and those people who take the opposite view also from a theistic point of from a theistic perspective or faith commitment. So because of one's belief in God and in and through Christian faith, or for example, one adopts or rejects violence as something that God supports, at least, or that religious believers and adherents should participate in. I mean, I think another way to get at this might be to think in this term, in this way: violence is part of the human condition, and there is really no culture, or very few cultures, that one can turn to in which violence in some form or another is not present. And one can find in non-theistic traditions, Buddhism, for example, examples of illustrations of violence, both individually and collectively speaking. One can find in pagan or polytheistic religions. I mean, we remember our study of the classics in Greek mythology, and that these were very violent religions. Theistic, yes, but certainly polytheistic, not monotheistic, not Abrahamic. So I think one really needs to begin to think about this as a phenomenon of human nature. The question then becomes, well, what is it that's unique or particular about the ways in which theistic traditions or the Abrahamic traditions make use of violence that might distinguish them from other traditions or resorts to violence? Mm.
Let's again go to another caller here, Urban, line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping that your guests could talk a little bit about the notion that religion is generally only one factor involved in violence, and that it's often accompanied by poverty and or oppression. Or if you could set me straight, I don't know, maybe that's just an assumption I've been making that's incorrect, and I'll listen offline.
All right.
Well, as I was saying earlier, religions exist in the world and they reflect and are in dialogue with that world. So I think that your caller is right on, that there are instances where there is violence that involves religion, whether or not the violence is central to that, or the religion is central to that violence, is an open question. A case in point, perhaps, or an illustration: in 1834, was a long, hot summer in Boston, and a mob gathered on August 3rd outside of a convent. It was a Protestant mob that gathered outside of an Ursuline convent in Charlestown, and demanded that the convent staff produce a young woman who had the mob thought had tried to escape from the convent. The mother superior could not produce the woman. The mob entered the convent and burned it to the ground. So what you have on the surface is Protestant versus Catholic violence. It doesn't get more religious than that, right? You know, the destruction of a convent. Well, if you take a closer look, there are lots of other things going on there. The mob that burned the convent was a working class mob, generally. The students in the convent, which also functioned as a boarding school, were from the generally privileged Protestant families of Boston. The mob may have been feeling the pressure of increased Catholic Irish labor in Boston. So this is all to say that there are lots of things going on there, and one can, on the surface, see religious violence. It just takes a little bit of a closer look to see that there are other factors involved.
One way I might go about thinking about the problem that the caller raises, and it's a good one, is to try and, in some cases, to de-link religion de-link poverty and crime, for example. There's a tendency. This is not to say that these things are unrelated, but if one pushes this metaphor too far, you come up with the conclusion that poor people commit crime. And while there is some link, obviously, between poverty and crime, there are many, many, many poor people who do not commit crime. And so, in some cases, religion can actually be a mitigating force that holds communities and families together, that that serves in powerful ways as a form of moral instruction, and again tries to offset the kind of forces of poverty or urban urban decay, if you will, that can lead to and be associated with crime. And one can also think about, you mentioned, the caller mentioned oppression, repairing to the to religious ideas in the civil rights movement, for example, was an effort to counter repression, to draw from both the Hebrew scriptures and the Christian New Testament to say that the ways in which African Americans were being treated and the rights, basic rights, denied to them was not only un-American but un-Christian as well, and that this was a clear effort to try to counter oppression, and that in this case, of course, violence was explicitly renounced by those such as Martin Luther King and others, and there is a very clear purposefulness in embracing nonviolence as the only way to, or at least the most effective way to demonstrate the moral high ground on which one stood, and in this case also the religious high ground on which one stood. And so these movements relied very strongly upon people who were not of high means, the poor. And so in this case, you saw the convergence of religion, poverty, and nonviolence, not the opposite of violence.
We're a little bit past the midpoint here. Just for anyone who might have tuned in the last 5 or 10 minutes, I want to reintroduce the guests you are listening to this morning. On the phone is John Carlson. He is Assistant Professor of Religious Studies at Arizona State University, where he is also Associate Director of the Center for the Study of Religion and Conflict. Here in the studio with me is Jonathan Ebel. He is Assistant Professor of Religious Studies here at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. They've been involved in organizing a symposium looking at various perspectives on violence, faith, and America. This will take place this week on Friday at the Illini Union. It's sponsored by the Illinois Forum on Religion in America under the umbrella of the Program for the Study of Religion. If you'd like to have more information about the various speakers and the topics of conversation, the best thing to do is go to the website of the Program for the Study on Religion. I'm sure you can get all of the information there. And as we continue here to talk about religion and violence, both in the frame of American society and a larger frame, questions are certainly welcome, and we have some other folks who are lined up. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Just to go back to pick up on one point, I just wanted to underscore, and in a sense we've talked about this, at least as far as Christianity is concerned, and for those people who would make the argument that nonviolence is a fundamental principle that was there from the very beginnings and would point to things that Jesus did and said as being illustrative of that fact, it remains the case, though, that the issue of violence or the issue of nonviolence, it sounds as if almost from the beginning of Christianity that this is still, it's been a contentious issue. It's not been something that is really clear. It has been a thing where people argued about it and where different people have taken different positions. Yes,
yes, I think so. And that the taking of one position, I've done a little bit of thinking about Tertullian, an early late second, early third century theologian, who's quite specific that Christians cannot get involved in the Roman army. His reasons for that don't have a whole lot to do with the commission of violence. What they have to do with is the forced oath taking that was inimical to the Christian faith. And in the same breath, or not the same breath, but a couple of breaths later, he'll talk about how the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. So we see there a little bit of a tension. We can argue about how deep that tension is, but it seems to me that this is a question that is a part of the of Christian communities from the very beginning. Yes,
I think that's right, and I would add that it's not so much a matter of whether violence is part of Christianity; it's to what role one has in that violence, whether one is the recipient of it, or whether one is the commissioner of it. And I think the references John made to Tertullian are right to point that out. You know, another way of thinking, and to take a much more contemporary or recent example, the late theologian Paul Ramsey, who was a Protestant thinker and was really very much responsible for the rejuvenation of just war thinking in the late 1960s when he was doing his work, he often understood the justification about using violence in and through the parable of the Good Samaritan. And while he certainly isn't attributing to Jesus the use of force, he does ask the question, well, what if the Good Samaritan had come across the man on the road while he was being taken upon by these others who sought to do him harm? Were the responsibilities that he demonstrated when he cared for the man after he was wounded and took him to a place to receive succor and aid, had he discovered this man sooner, would he have been in a position where he should have offered some kind of assistance or help, and particularly through an intervention, and particularly in the case of someone who is charged with the protection of citizens, those who were in the police or some form of state agency that would have responsibility for this, shouldn't they then be in a position where they can use force, some might call it violence, again, to protect others? And so that was Ramsey's way of thinking about approaching the just war tradition, which is a bit different than the way others had talked about the justifiability of force. And he clearly saw neighbor love, the neighbor love that Jesus preached, as central to that tradition. One other add-on to that, he, for that same reason, because love is such a central piece of how one thinks about the use of force, one has to be very careful to distinguish between using force against combatants and non-combatants, which is another part of the just war tradition, and certainly central to the rules of war that modern militaries acknowledge and adhere to.
Well, let's bring some more people who are listening into the conversation and go to Champaign Line 1 for the next. Hello.
Hi. Interesting discussion. A while back, one of the guests commented in passing that Buddhist history included violent episodes as well. I wonder if he could amplify on that.
Well, I think I'm not a scholar of Southeast Asia, so I don't want to get too far into the details. But I believe the Tamil Tigers are of Buddhist persuasion, and there have been other episodes that I've discussed with my colleagues. So. But I'm certainly open to hearing alternate perspectives. Was there something particular you wanted to speak to?
Well, I may be naive or uninformed, which is why I asked the question. And I don't think you've done much to amplify it. You made that sweeping comment to flush the Buddhist tradition into the same category as all the others we've talked about, which may well be valid. I don't know. But that's why I'm asking. For example, you say that you and your colleagues have discussed other, just you don't need to go into detail, but I'm curious, at least from my own research, what other episodes?
Well, I guess what I was trying to convey was the idea that I think violence is part of the human condition, and that to the extent that that one can look to many different traditions, many different whether they're religious or non-religious, pagan or secular, or whatever the case might be, that and one can find individual examples of it. I mean, Buddhist countries all have police forces. They all have crime. People who adhere to them have been participants and victims of of violence. And this is only to say that in some cases religion is not the all defining factor in the presence of violence, either individually or collectively in a society. And that's to some extent what one of the assumptions oftentimes is, particularly about monotheistic religions.
And John is on solid ground there. It depends on how one slices the Buddhist tradition, certainly. Do you define Buddhism as solely the religion practiced by the Sangha, the collected body of monks in a given area? But by that definition, it wasn't, I think maybe 20, 25 years ago, there was a famous set of conflicts between Buddhist monks in South Korea. I don't know the specifics of this, and I don't want to go too far into it. But there, you can certainly find members of the Buddhist Sangha involved in violence. And then there's where does one stop defining Buddhism? Is it just at the temple door, or the people who are followers of Buddhism? Because then you're into the same pot of violence, nonviolence, crime, and working against crime that the rest of the world participates in.
Yeah.
And I don't want to dodge your question, but I want to allow time for other callers. If you'll send me an email, and you can go straight to my webpage too. You mentioned particularly for your own research. I wanted to make sure that you didn't feel like I was completely dodging the question.
Sure.
I can give you a little bit more specific detail, and we can have a conversation offline about that too.
Yeah. And I hope the caller will forgive me also for wanting to include some other callers, because I have several and we have maybe about 5 or 6 minutes left. Let's go next to someone in the nearby community of Belgium. This is line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yes. Just to take us into a slightly different direction, most of your conversation has been about warfare and violence. However, it seems that slavery was justified by the Bible in many things, with the mark of Cain and all of its ensuing violence that's been perpetrated upon people. Would you like to make some comments along that line?
Certainly. Well, when one talks about violence shaping American religion, there probably is no better way to enter into that conversation than through slavery, which, you are right, was at least seen as acceptable by people in religious hierarchies when it was not supported by a full-blown pro-slavery theology, as we saw in the early part of the 19th century. And interestingly, the point that I like to make in my classes is that the evangelical movement began as an anti-slavery movement, and that in its interaction with Southern slaveholding culture, began to develop and preach a pro-slavery gospel. There is this institutionalized, dehumanizing violence of slavery that shapes American evangelicalism, that ends up rending the churches in 1838, 1844, 1845 for the Presbyterians, Methodists, and Baptists, respectively, and ultimately bringing the Union down for a period of 5 years. So that's a wonderful point, yes.
Might I also note that with slavery, they brought slavery on with biblical terms, but yet slaves accepted the same religion, which I find extremely interesting.
Well, accepted the same religion eventually. I think that we shouldn't lose track of the fact that many slaves came to, well, I would venture almost all slaves were enslaved as non-Christians, some of them Muslims, the majority of them followers of African tribal religions, and only over the course of about a 250-year period began to take on Christianity.
Thank you very much.
This is a very interesting and important point that's being raised, because it points to the complexity of religion, the multifacetedness of it. I mean, there's a tendency in our society of left and right and pro and con to take one of those views, and one of the things we're trying to invite with this symposia is to really to invite us to release ourselves to some extent from what our assumptions might be about whether religion supports violence or opposes it, or whether it's that violence can be justifiable or not, and to think about the complexity of the matter. I mean, one could, John Point talked about the same religion, so to speak, or at least Christianity certainly has various schools and movements within it, but all sorts of Christians took different positions on slavery. One can look, theologically speaking, to someone like Thomas Aquinas, who understands and defines violence precisely as the use of an external force to control or direct the will against what is natural, against what is good. And certainly enslaving someone is the consummate example of a form of violence, whether the slave master is cruel or not. And it's for those kinds of reasons that while there were Christians who strongly supported and refer to the mark of Cain as justifications for slavery, there are others who said this is the most unchristian form of or institution that one can imagine, and clearly saw the relationship between religious liberty and political liberty, and that's an abiding trait in our culture that runs from the Revolutionary War to the Civil War, and one might even say to where we are today, if one thinks about some of the descriptions about the Taliban and the desire to liberate and to restore freedom to the people living under that hideous rule.
We're very short on time here. I do want to see if we can include one more caller, and that would be in Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Yeah, hi. How are you? Very complex subject. I look at this sort of as in the religious element of violence as an excuse. I mean, you can use it as an excuse not to kill somebody and an excuse to kill somebody. And I was in a combat unit 38 years ago, and my excuse was they were going to kill me, so I killed them. So I see all this sort of in the intellectual level is fascinating, and it's very, you can sit around and digress, and it's nice to sit in an office and talk about it or a symposium. But when you're actually in the situation where someone would kill you, let's say in a war like I was in, all the philosophy just disappears, and you basically just want to survive. But I'll just leave you with one joke I heard years ago. It said that when you talk to God, it's called praying. When God talks to you, it's called schizophrenia. I thought I'd mention that as an aside. But what I did all those years ago, I'm trying to forget about, but I enjoy the intellectual endeavor, but it's just, it's just not that simple. Thank you.
All right. Well, I appreciate the comment.
I hope that we don't come off as simplifying or as removed from the experiences of quote unquote real people, which we all are. I'm working on a project now that is attempting to recover the religious thoughts and lives of American soldiers from the First World War, and as a historian, it's almost impossible to get right on top of the experience. But from what I've been able to do, I've found quite a bit of theologizing and reflection on religion and religious the demands of the religious life.
Let me just add briefly, as a veteran and actually as a reservist, I take these matters very seriously. That is, the theological and intellectual matters that I dwell upon, I take them very seriously. Given my own experiences, given my continued interactions with people in the services, and given also my knowledge of what's happening in the service academies, there is an effort to think really deeply and morally speaking about what the use of force entails. And one might think about these things simply as excuses, but one of the reasons that religion is important in this, and what may make it a very different kind of excuse, so to speak, is that it seeks to to tap the depth of truth. And the reason it can produce conflict is because people have different and competing ideas of what truth is. So at least within the just war tradition, it's really trying to make room for the idea that that your actions in combat, your effort to stay alive and to kill someone else because they were trying to kill you, is actually not an excuse. It's morally justifiable, and that in a justly declared and legitimately war declared by a legitimate authority, that this is what you're supposed to do, and that one doesn't need to feel as if one's compromising oneself or making excuses. This is an honorable tradition to be a part of and justifiable.
We're just about at the point that we have to stop. Just before we do that, I mentioned a couple of times that the symposium will be taking place at the end of this week here on the campus, the second of three that our guests have been involved in putting together, and this is taking place on Friday. And I wonder maybe here, Professor Ebel, you want to say just talk for a minute or so about...
Sure. Well, we have four wonderful guests. One of them, Professor Carlson, who's on the phone here, but also Professor Jean Bethke Elstein from the University of Chicago, world-renowned just war thinker. Professor John Witte, who's on the faculty of Emory University Law School and has done a lot of thinking about the religious rootings of law. And then Professor Ned O'Gorman, one of our own here at the University of Illinois, who's in speech communication and has written some very interesting things on John Foster Dulles's massive retaliation policy and the religious resonances of that. So I encourage everyone to come and listen. It's going to be a very stimulating morning.
All right. Well, this is sponsored by the Illinois Forum on Religion in America, which is part of the Program for the Study of Religion here at University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. These events taking place on Friday morning, this coming Friday, the 20th, at the Illini Union. And again, if you'd like to have more information on this, you can go to the website of the Program for the Study of Religion at the U of I. That's probably the easiest way to do it. I want to thank our two guests here in the studio with me, Jonathan Ebel. He is Assistant Professor of Religious Studies here at University of Illinois. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
And joining us by telephone, John Carlson, Assistant Professor of Religious Studies at Arizona State University. He is also Associate Director of the Center for the Study of Religion and Conflict there at Arizona State. Professor Carlson, thank you very much.
David, thank you for having me on the show.